This is CliffCentral.com.
Fear's a powerful thing. I mean, it's got a lot of firepower. If you can figure out a way to wrestle that fear, to push you from behind rather than stand in front of you, that's very powerful.
I have a dream.
Multiplying leadership. Moving society the millennial way.
You don't want to end up going after goals and dreams and neglect yourself.
We gon' take it to the moon, take it to the stars. How many people you know can take it this far?
Welcome to the Youth Leadership Platform with your host, Bongani Tau.
I brought more soldiers than you did.
Youth Leadership Platform.
Welcome to another exciting episode of the Youth Leadership Platform with your host, Bongani Tau. Follow the conversation on at YLP Cliff Central, Twitter, Instagram, and Youth Leadership Platform on Facebook at Simply Bongani across board for my personal one. As per usual, the Youth Leadership Platform hosts leaders in different industries to unearth how authentic leadership helps them to move and influence in their different spheres and spaces in life, and to explore principles that help them to be the success they are. And today's guest is just another one of those powerful individuals using something very common to us, something that we use every single day but take for granted, the power of language. His name is Malusi, and after posting a couple of Zulu words and their meanings and their use in day-to-day life, he started receiving a lot of requests from mostly white South Africans, which was foreign to a lot of his friend requests and his friends' makeup on Facebook. This led to him opening up a Facebook page, which is called Everyday Zulu with Malusi. And what he does there is he posts a single Zulu word every single day and its use in day-to-day life. And people get to interact and comment on the box, try and use the word. And a lot of people from different backgrounds that are interested in learning the Zulu language come or flock to the page. And they come there. And it's a melting pot for cultures, different people, and different from different traditions, really. Now, today, this has grown in numbers. I'm telling you, if you go to the Facebook page, the numbers speak for themselves. And when it started, as he will say during the course of the interview, it was something that he was just doing passionately as a lover of the language. But now it has grown to unify the country, and that's his mission, pretty much. To bring a lot of people from different cultures to interact, different races, different languages, different backgrounds, to come interact and become this one unified South Africa. He contributes for Fin Week. He does a lot of things with Kaya FM. And he's recently started a speaking tour, and one of which was hosted by the University of Johannesburg. Go and check out at Everyday Zulu. But for now, here's my guest today, Malusi. Welcome to the Youth Leadership Platform. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm awesome. Honored to be here.
So a bit of the backstory of your life, because we like to All introduce, right. obviously, our guests to our audiences and our
sure.
listeners
sure.
so that they get to know who's this person that's doing this amazing work. So take us a bit through your background right. and upbringing.
I was born in Soweto 40 years ago, and I was born at Baragwanath Hospital, as most Sowetans, I guess. And we lived in Fuller North
yes.
at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Went to school at Soweto for the early years, and my mother then managed to organize me a bursary, and I went to a private school called St. Barnabas College.
Oh.
And then I managed to get myself expelled.
Oh! What happened and, there? What happened there?
Just a series of misunderstandings. That's what I'm going to say. And then I eventually matriculated at Northview High School.
Okay.
Yeah, that was about 20-odd years ago. Yeah. We didn't have money, obviously, to pay for me to go to tertiary. So I spent a year just doing odd jobs, doing this, that. And fortunately, I then managed to get a bursary to go to the AAA.
Okay.
School of Advertising. That was in 1998.
Wow, that's a while back.
Yeah, that's a really long time ago. Yeah, so I went to AAA. I mean, it was a bit of a struggle in terms financially, because my bursary only covered my tuition. So money for transport, lunch, and anything else that I needed to have part-time jobs. And so I've always had a very good work ethic, because I had to. I didn't have a choice.
Sure.
But fortunately for me, and maybe some might say unfortunately, within 5 months of this copywriting course that I was in, the ad agency that had given me the bursary then offered me employment.
Oh, wow.
So I ended up not finishing my qualification, and I went straight to work. And I've been in advertising in some shape or form for the past 20 years now. So, in fact, on the 1st of July this year, it will be exactly 20 years since I walked into an ad agency.
That's a long time.
That is a long time. Sure. I've also dabbled in entertainment. I used to run an entertainment company with a friend of mine, DJ Pepsi.
Okay.
We used to do events and music and that sort of thing. But I only did that for 2 years, and I went back into advertising. In 2009, I left mainstream advertising and started my own ad agency with a couple of friends of mine.
Sure.
And we've been doing that on and off again. So my life, you know, it has not been very linear, even my career.
Sure.
I do lots of stuff. Sure. You know what I mean? So one moment of like, okay, I'm doing this. And then I find a different opportunity, or I look for different ways.
And you pivot.
To find something. Yeah, and I pivot. You know?
Sure.
And it's always frightening. But I always just say, I'm going to give it a go. You know, if it doesn't work out, I would have learned something. Mm-hmm. If it works out, great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's generally my approach. You know, even that UJ talk.
Sure.
It was the second time that I'd given a talk like that. And the first one was also UJ. This one was slightly different. But I was so scared. You know what I mean? I was so scared. But I'm like, as in, I've been invited.
Sure.
So I go for it. Especially when you get invited, I always look at it, because you know there's so many people who they seek opportunities and they don't get them.
Mm-hmm.
I get them. I should not dishonor them, you know, because there are people who would kill for them.
Sure.
So I need to put my fear away and give it a go.
Sure.
Yeah.
Hmm. And with these different transitions, you know, being in the creative space, like you pivot a lot.
Yeah.
Because you are driven by ideas.
Yeah.
And ideas obviously steer you into different directions. A lot of people seem to look at that and think, this person does not have direction, this person does not know what they want in life. What could be your response to that?
Look, I think even though I do pivot, I always stay within the same sector.
Okay.
So you know what I mean? So I do things that are within my skill set and that are still in line with my career. Do you know what I mean? I think problems start arising where you completely ditch what you've been doing and you go
and let it go completely.
And yeah. And also the problem with that for me is that you never become good at anything.
Oh, okay.
Do you know what I mean? Because the thing about creativity is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
You need to practice it for a long time to become good at your craft.
Mm-hmm.
You can't start something, leave it, and go do something else. Now you've done 11 things that you're mediocre at. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So that expression, jack of all trades and master of none. You know.
Yeah.
So for me, creativity is about mastery. Do you know what I mean? You must say, this is what I do. And you do it and you keep doing it. Yes, maybe you apply it differently in different contexts. That's how you pivot. But I really think you need to stick to your guns and do the thing that you do.
Oh.
You can evolve within that thing, but you can't keep doing everything
completely
else. You're going to find yourself a starving artist. It's just going to be that simple.
Sure.
Yeah.
If you think about your past, what does it smell like?
What does my past smell like?
Yeah.
Jeez, it smells like smoke machine from a nightclub.
Were you a party animal?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not even gonna lie.
what are some moments that you look back at and you're like, yo, jeez, man, you know, I was a wild one.
Oh man. Oh, you know, I don't want to lie. I really made the most of my 20s. You know, I really lived life to the full. And it was with the belief that by the time I get to where I am now, mm-hmm. in my 40s, because I just turned 40 a few months ago, I'll be done. I don't want funny things in my life. They're out of my system.
Yeah, you don't crave it.
Yeah, so I mean, there were many crazy stories. There's one time I'd gone to this event with Oskido.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I'd gone with him as a friend. And we were partying so hard, I think he forgot that he came with me. And we were all the way in Rustenburg. And he drove without me.
Oh, my goodness.
So he left me at this party. I didn't know anyone. And my cell phone battery had died. So, Joe, you know, fortunately, someone lent me their phone. And fortunately, he answered. And he realized, it's like, oh, I thought you were sitting next to me. I'm like, no, I'm not in the car. And by that time, he was all the way in Pretoria. So he had to drive back.
All the way back.
Yeah. So, I mean, there were interesting times. And this was during the time when I was doing that entertainment thing, you know. And the reason I quit, I was like, you know what? I'm not cut out for this life. You know, let me go back to writing and creating adverts and campaigns and that sort of thing.
What does it sound like?
It sounds, I think it's got a lot of laughter.
Okay.
A lot of laughter.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of music. A lot of house music.
Or house music.
A lot of house music.
Okay.
A lot of kwaito. You know, I mean, when Kwaito came out, we were in high school. So it was a crazy time for us, you know.
Sure.
Because there'd been Ipabulkam that we were not really feeling.
Into it,
you know,
yeah.
We were like, okay, you know. And then Beguna House then was called the International, you know, Inner City. Mm-hmm. And we were not really feeling that stuff. It wasn't really great. And then, boom, one day I remember hearing Atta Mafukate's Vuvuzela for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, I thought, what is this? This is amazing. And I never looked back, you know.
Yeah.
I loved that stuff. So when I started hanging out with the guys at Kalawa, it was amazing. You know what I mean? Imagine now you're friends with your icons.
Oh, yes.
It was an amazing time. And then when house resurfaced in South Africa with the deep house, it was more palatable for us now. So, yeah. I mean, I also listen to hip-hop, mm-hmm. you know. I think I'm too old for the trap. I don't understand what's happening there.
Like, you listen to Quavo and you're like, okay, but what is this guy saying? What is he saying? Yeah.
So my son, who's 15, listens to that stuff in the car, and I'm just like, young ass, you know. But I don't criticize. I mean, that's the time. That's what the young people are listening to. And I mean, Nati in our generation, those who are older than us, I think for as long as they've been human beings, the older human beings think the younger ones have terrible taste.
That
is just life.
And
you need to accept that.
That's how the story goes.
Yeah.
What are some campaigns that you've worked on that were your most memorable campaigns?
Oh, man. So a lot of the work that we do now is design work. But let me try and go back in my career. I remember my first campaign. You know, that I remember. It was for Coca-Cola.
Oh, yes.
It was a promotion where you could win a Corsa.
Okay.
And I for me, what was amazing, back at the time, I used to love Raga. And so I got to work with Appleseed and General, you know. And so, Admiral. So that was amazing for me. But the funny thing about that campaign, I mean, I didn't have a car then. You know, I just come out of school. And you could win a car. I'm like, but... And then they tell us, we can't enter. I'm like, but I need to win a car. Like, no,
I need a car myself. Yes.
They're like, no, you work here, so you cannot enter the competition. So for me, that was quite funny. Because I'm sitting there, I'm creating this campaign. I need a car, but I can't get a car. And then there's a poster that became a campaign that I did a few years back. Well, it was done by, because I was a creative director by then.
Okay.
So it was done by a team underneath me. the copywriter in the team, who is the one who essentially came up with the idea. His name is Jose Motsiri.
Okay.
It was around the time when former President Zuma was big into singing that Mshiniwam song of his. Yeah, so what we did is we created a poster to promote, to encourage people to hand in their firearms, right? To hand in their guns. So, okay. Tina, we turned it around and said, "Leta umshini wako."
Okay.
Yeah. And it went on to become the SAPS call to action valet to get people to bring in their guns. We won a couple of awards for it.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So that was cool. I mean, I've done work for SAB. I've done, it's been 20 years. There's been a lot of work produced in that time. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
Let's get into the crux of why we're here today.
Yeah, sure.
Everyday Zulu. Take us back to the first word that you put out there. And okay. How it has grown to what it is today.
All right. Let me maybe tell you first where it came from, where the thought came from.
Sure.
Right? And it's linked to the conversation we're having now, yeah, advertising.
Mm-hmm.
So my problem with the advertising, there are many, but my main one is the way it disregards African languages. They are treated like they are third-class citizens.
Mm.
And I'll tell you where it manifests itself in the worst form. It's in radio advertising. So Here's how it works. You will write, a copywriter will write a radio script in English.
Sure.
That script will then be sent away to translators who will then translate it into the other languages, which is fine. There's no problem with that process, okay? The problem then comes when you then go to studio to record that radio ad. The copywriter, who more often than not is white, because that's just the makeup of the advertising industry, who more often than not is white, will be there when they're recording their English to make sure that it comes out amazing. They might even sit for the Afrikaans, maybe if they speak Afrikaans, to make sure it comes out amazing. As soon as they are done with that, they leave. They go back to the agents, leaving the African languages unsupervised.
Hmm.
Do you see the problem?
Sure.
So the engineer.
So the important ones are done and
yes,
and dusted.
Yes. So the engineer, the sound engineer, yeah, he's good at his job, but it's not his job to really direct voices, right?
Sure.
The language advisor, who sometimes is the translator, yeah, he's good at their job, but they didn't write the script. So there's no way they're going to get it right. So for me, that has always been something that bothers me. It bothers me just philosophically. Mm-hmm. This is a problem.
Okay.
But also, as a marketer, if you give your business to people who can't account for the quality of work, 80% of the quality of the work that they produce for you, there's a problem.
Sure.
Why do you continue giving those companies business? But they continue, right? So I had written this article. Because, I mean, there's an ongoing issue with advertising about transformation.
Okay.
And people have been approaching it emotionally. So I wanted to make a rational argument.
Sure.
And that argument was that, saying it makes terrible business sense to give business to people who don't ensure that the product is of quality.
Mm.
And I wrote, and it was beautiful, it was funny, da da da. But when I read this article, I was like, you know, the one thing I know about people don't like the truth.
Mm.
People don't like also complaining, mm-hmm. right? So if I put out, and they know this thing, so if I put out this article, it's just more complaining.
Sure.
More complaining. And all that it's going to do, to be honest, is put me in a bad light, mm-hmm. but it won't change the situation.
Sure.
You know? So I thought, Yazin, and because I've seen it before, we've complained before. So I thought, I shelved the article, and I thought, all right, Yazin, if these people don't appreciate our languages, we might as well start ourselves. So on my Facebook, because I've been in advertising for 20 years, I've got a lot of marketers and advertising people.
Oh, okay.
So what I wanted to do is to show them the beauty that lies in our languages and the understanding that black people, particularly black creatives, inherently have in them to deliver uniquely South African communication solutions.
Sure.
And that's how I started posting this Zulu word a day. Mm. It was a celebration of isiZulu.
Sure.
But also to say, look at what you're missing out on by not working with people like me. You know, not necessarily me. Just, you don't have to work with
but
me.
Just people.
But people like me.
Like me, yes.
Yeah. And so that's how it started. And I was just posting. I think the and it's quite relevant. The first word that I posted was ugusa. Ugusa. You know, ugusa.
Yeah.
As in dawn, morning, but naughtiness, you know.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what I was doing.
Sure.
I was being naughty. Because sure. A lot of the... So the word would be a normal word. But the way I then bring it to life is usually playful and sometimes... Even dangerous, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
I touch on very sensitive issues, you know.
Sure, sure.
And I mean, I've had people complain to me, and I tell them, "Ah, Baba, you know, this is my Facebook. You can go somewhere else if you don't like."
And this is the language. We're putting stuff that's already there.
Yes, and this is how people speak.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm not an academic. I'm not a Zulu expert, young tall. I am a guy who's able to write in an engaging manner. And that comes from my 20 years of writing and advertising.
Sure.
So that is my skill, actually. The ability to write in an engaging manner.
Sure.
IsiZulu, sometimes I even have to research some of the words just to make sure that I've got it right. So I posted this. And then one day, I'm driving to... I get to a meeting, right? Early morning meeting. I think this is like a 8:30 meeting. I come out of the meeting and I've got 40 friend requests. I'm like, okay, this looks odd because the max I would get maybe a day is like 10 friend requests.
Sure.
I don't know why I'm getting 40 by 9:30.
So, in the morning.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, maybe there's a glitch or whatever.
Yeah.
I go to my next meeting. I come out and I've got, I think, about 700 friend Ooh. Requests. I'm like, okay, something is happening.
Something's going on
yeah,
here.
Something is going on here. I go in. I look at these friend requests and it's mostly white people, middle-aged white people, middle-aged white women, what we would call tannies.
Sure,
you know.
Sure.
I think, what is happening here now? You know, because I there's nothing that I've done to attract all these white people to my profile.
Sure.
You know? So I contact a friend of mine. He's a former employer of mine, but we've remained friends. He's a middle-aged white guy. So I contact him. I figure, since he's a middle-aged white guy, he must know why these middle-aged white people want to...
to be your friend.
Yeah. And also that day, I had posted a word, mkabe. You know the group, shango mkabe.
Sure.
Yeah. Even though I said Zulu, and I'd explained that it's not Zulu, it's a colloquial term. And I'd posted that word and said, ukuthi umkabe is that look that you give someone when you want to show them that you are displeased. Or you want to intimidate them. And it's related to the surname Mugabe.
Sure.
Because he always looked mean in the 80s when we saw him on TV.
Sure.
And hence Mugabe. And it was during the week of the coup.
Okay.
So I thought maybe these people are former Rhodesians who think I am pro-Rhodesia and I am not.
Oh, know? Okay.
So I asked my friend. My friend was like, no, man. These people probably just really enjoy your Zulu word a day, accept the friend requests and see. I was skeptical. And then I got an inbox from some random woman that I don't know. And she said, oh, thank you very much for teaching us isiZulu. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, all right, cool. I mean, and then she's like, I can see you don't know what's happening. I'm like, no, I have no idea. And then she sent me a link to a blog called The Good Things Guy.
Okay.
That's where I found somebody had written an article about this everyday Zulu thing.
Ah.
And that's where all these friend requests
are coming from. Okay.
By the end of that day, I had 2,000 friend requests.
Ooh.
So now, South Africa being South Africa, I was apprehensive about accepting all these white people.
Sure.
You know, because I've seen on social media the things that white people write.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, obviously not all
and
of them.
It's protecting your energy and your space.
Yes,
as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And not all of them, but it can get nasty. You
sure.
know, so I decided, okay, I'll accept them, but I'll immediately unfollow. So I'll accept you and unfollow you. So you see my posts because that's what you want to see.
Okay.
But I don't see anything
that
from
you post. Okay.
Because yeah. But that was impractical. You know, you can't do that with 2,000 people.
Yeah.
So I eventually said, you know what? I'm just going to accept everyone. And then I'll unfriend as we go.
Okay.
If you post nonsense, I unfriend you.
Sure.
And I can tell you, in the 4 months or 5 months, I'm not very good at arithmetic. I think it's 5 months that I accepted and I've been accepting random friend requests. I think I've only had to block 4 people, which for me was an eye-opener.
Okay.
You see, and that's when I realized, good, even Nati as black people, we're prejudiced. We make assumptions.
Sure.
Because when I'm with my peers, we have told ourselves that all white people are racist.
Yeah.
You know, we've decided.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, this was shocking. You know, firstly, it was shocking to discover, good, oh my God, I was wrong. But to discover, good, when did I become this person that makes assumptions about people without ever engaging with them?
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. And that's when that light bulb started clicking in my head. What, yes, something is wrong here. We have created these little silos. We live in our little boxes and we make assumptions about the other people.
About the other person before understanding.
And yeah. So when now this page now, it's going, people are engaging. What's interesting is also other people from different cultures are learning, besides the word a day, people are learning each other.
Okay.
You know.
So from the interactions, how people react to a certain word,
yeah,
what they say about the word gives them an understanding.
Yeah, say, yeah.
Okay, does this person vibe really with black people or with a certain tribe within?
Yeah, know, yeah. So because language is very revealing,
sure,
about a people,
okay, young
Tola. So people are starting to see, oh, so this is how. Like, for instance, someone was saying to me there were certain things they never understood about some of their colleagues, about how they approach work and life.
Okay.
But after reading, they're like, oh.
So now it makes sense.
Oh, so this person is coming from this angle. Sure, you sure. know what I mean? Nati, you'd say something and you were not aware that an Indian is going to find it offensive.
Sure.
You're like, oh, I didn't know because I just live in my world. You know what I mean? So that's when I started thinking, there's something magical happening here, you know. And so I started also posting more consciously, posting, wanting to provoke conversations.
Okay.
Wanting to get people talking to each other.
Sure.
Sometimes I provoke things that are upsetting intentionally.
So people can converse.
So people can speak about it. People can get upset and thresh it out, you know. And what I found is because these conversations, we usually have them with our peers. We never see somebody else's perspective.
Yes. Yes.
So if I'm sitting there, nabo Jabu, nabo Tshepo, nabo Sibongile,
you all speak the same language.
We all speak
the same.
And
yeah.
we all agree.
Sure.
Which
sure.
is it. But now.
So it's not really a conversation.
No.
It's just a voice that's amplified by.
Yeah.
As
I say, it's a single narrative.
Sure.
It's a single
sure.
narrative. Sure. You're all saying the same thing, young child. But now on the platform, you have people who have differing views. And when they put some of their views, it forces you to stop and question yourself. The things that you really thought you knew and you really thought you believed get called into question.
Sure.
You know? But you can also see other people on the other end conceding Nabo, which I had never ever thought about it like that. You know, the amount of times I've said to myself, I have never, ever thought about it like that is amazing. And
sure.
the amount of time I see people who write, hey, boss, you know what this Ngamla said? Hey, nah, I'd never seen it like that. Nah, I just thought all Mangamla are nonsense. Went on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's that. So that's where now I've arrived at. So I set up a new initiative, which is called Everyday Speak.
Okay.
Okay. So Everyday Speak is going to be the umbrella property under which Melusi's Everyday Zulu sits.
Comes, okay.
Okay. What we're working on is other languages. So we would have, under my umbrella, content generated by other people. So we'll have Xolisa's Everyday Xhosa.
Xhosa. Mashamaite's Tsonga.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're working on an app for that. So
oh,
that
okay.
It sits as an app. With my book coming out, we're hoping Guti, the book will become a series. I mean, there are many, many more Zulu words. But we're also hoping that the other languages will also grow so big that we can do deals for those particular authors and creators of that content.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. Because the idea is not to put isiZulu on a pedestal. It just happens with ngumZulu.
And you have to start there.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if Bengum Sutu, it would have been Tsepo's Everyday Sutu.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And also I've been very cognizant in how I approach this thing. Which it doesn't come as Zulu superiority.
Mm-hmm.
It is not about that. You know what I mean? isiZulu is no better than anybody's language. It's just I started this thing and here we are. If it had been started by Tsakane it would be Tsakane's everyday song. Do you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
So
let's talk a bit about some words that have more than one meaning. And depending on the setting where you use them, you know, you could either impress a crowd or start a fight. For instance, I can think of a Xhosa word, ugnyoba.
Yeah.
Where, where in Xhosa it's bribe.
Yeah.
But if you're in a Zulu setting or in a Gasi
situation,
it's sex.
Yes, it's sexual
intercourse. But it's one word. Isn't that fascinating?
It's amazing because language is that versatile.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And also because it's versatile, it evolves. I mean, it's funny that you mentioned Unyoba because we were speaking about it 2 days ago with mates of mine.
Sure.
Saying, we wonder how it came to be, you know? How did it evolve from isiXhosa, from bribery to sex?
Sure.
You know, was someone using sex as bribery?
You know? Yes.
Were they trading sex and then it eventually became sex?
That.
It was probably something like that.
Mm.
To someone who's trading sex for favors and then Unyoba became... Yeah. I mean, another word that's fascinating is nja.
Yeah.
Nja, you know, dog. Uinjayami. But if my wife calls me nja, I know I'm in trouble.
You are trash.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, when you say to me njandin, I'm like, yeah, sure, boss.
Yeah.
My wife says njandin. Hey, I know what there's something I didn't do. You know, I mean, I remember one time I was talking to friends of mine, we were young then. And yeah, sure, nja. And my grandmother was at and he's turned. You don't like yourself.
How can you call each other dog?
You know, so that's fascinating as well. What other words? There are many words that are like that. And it's all about context.
It's koko as well.
It's koko. I mean, it's koko is quite interesting. I did post it's koko and it was one of the most popular words on my platform. Yeah, it's koko is the crust at the bottom of a pot.
Yeah.
You know?
After cooking, ipapa.
Ipapa or rimili rice or whatever.
Sure.
But colloquially, it's koko is someone who's amazing.
Sure.
And I think where it comes from is because it's koko doesn't wanna.
Yeah, you can't do anything.
Now we're more koko. That means your awesomeness cannot be changed.
Sure.
It cannot be moved.
Sure.
Young Tol.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's koko. What I discovered when I wrote that word is white people eat his cock, you know. Like I think we eat his cock, but most of the time it's not out of choice, you know what I mean? It's like there's
it's
no
like
other food.
Yeah.
For one, they're like, oh, it's amazing with butter.
Yes.
Oh, I'm like, guys. I don't want to eat his cock. I grew up on his cock. Now I've got a bit of cash. I'm definitely not eating his cock.
It's interesting how with now bringing that up with certain things that we eat, for instance.
Yeah.
For some people, it's leisure. It's like I'm trying this stuff out.
Yeah.
And it's interesting and it's fascinating and it's probably nice. But because what it represents to you.
Yeah.
Coming from a place where you struggled and this was your daily meal. It's like, for you, it's leisure. For me, it used to be my daily
And
my
I
daily
don't want
go-to.
It now.
Yeah.
No, it's like, for me, it's like, I'm out, Duana. You know, I'm like, nah, I'm good, man. I'm out. I can afford better things now.
Sure, sure.
You know, it's koko is another thing like that. I also remember when I was at AAA, a classmate of mine, a white guy, suggests that we go backpacking in Europe.
Okay.
So we're going to stay where? No, stay on benches. I'm like, no, the brother. No, brother. You know, black people have worked too hard here for me to go be a voluntary hobo there in Europe.
That's where we come from.
I'm like, no. But now, in hindsight, I wish I had done it.
You know?
It would have been an
experience.
So sometimes, you know, those things close us out of great opportunities.
Sure.
You know, like, it is one of my great regrets, you know, because this guy, he had put together a plan, an itinerary, and he was going to get the tickets subsidized. The only thing was that we are going to be hobos there.
When we get
room.
There, yeah.
Yeah, and for me, I was like, nah, man. You know, so yeah.
And there's some Afrikaans words that have been adapted to Tsotsital. And, you know, in Tsotsital, they mean different thing.
Yes.
Than they are in Afrikaans. I'm trying to think of words. I don't know if you have one at the top of your head that we you know, most commonly use. And, you know, in some instances, we don't even realize that,
that it's an
this
Afrikaans
is Afrikaans word.
Yeah, I'm trying
because it's been part of our culture and our linguistics that we think, well, actually, this is one
Fokol.
Of ours. Fokol.
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 Fokol is, you know, Fere Fokol.
Sure.
You know? I mean, to us, it's even a greeting.
Yeah.
You know, someone says, Fere, Fere Fokol.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like, there's nothing.
In Sesotho, Fenster.
Okay.
Fenster, window, which is Afrikaans, Fenster.
Oh, yes.
You
yes.
know. And yeah, so there's a lot of that. I mean, I do speak a bit of Afrikaans. It's not great. But right now, my Afrikaans has just run away. It's gone. It ran
because,
away.
Because you're sitting with me right now.
Yeah, I'm sitting with Juju. So the Afrikaans is running away from Juju.
The danger of the single narrative. I remember coming across a talk by Chimamanda Adichie Ngozi.
Yeah.
And she was speaking about how when she got to the States, that her roommate at the university that they were studying was fascinated by the thought of a Nigerian girl who was a diehard fan of Mariah Carey, because she had Mariah Carey CDs and things that she'd play when they were sitting in the room. And then she'd go to the stove and start making eggs and different things. And she was like, but she's from Nigeria, you know? How did she come across Mariah Carey for one? How does she know how to operate a stove? Do you think we are doing enough to kind of build that understanding gap between different cultures and backgrounds, and as well to kind of break that barrier where we are living in our individual silos? Like, white people think a certain way of black people, and black people think a certain way about white people.
To be honest, you know, for a long time, I thought, as black people, we were interacting with other cultures.
Sure.
And I thought white people are not interacting with us. I still maintain that white people are not interacting with us. But I've also been alerted to the fact that we're also not doing it. We think we're doing it.
Sure.
But we're not doing it, you know. We all go to the office. We speak to each other at the office. We laugh. Maybe we even hang out at the pub after work, but we all go to our different worlds afterwards.
Sure.
You know, and then what happens is you then spend time with people. Obviously, you're not all homogenous because you're individuals.
Sure.
But you find with ideologically, you're usually aligned.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what we might know about each other is superficial.
Okay.
We know the surface.
The surface.
But
stuff.
We don't get under the skin and really get to know what drives people, you know. Like, a lot of us just assume white people are driven by a superiority complex,
mm-hmm.
you know. And you find that's not necessarily the case. I mean, the other thing that I've found is that there's a lot of fear. And to us, it doesn't make sense because we don't understand. So if you're standing there and you're scared of me and I don't know why you're scared, what that does is I just dismiss your fear. Instead of really engaging on why are you scared of me?
Mm.
And I think that's what we need to get at. With why are you so scared of us? Do you know what I mean? Because when we are sitting, I mean, I can speak for my peers. There's never anyone who's saying, hey, let's go kill white people. You know what I mean? Never.
Yeah.
You know, but they think that.
Sure.
You know, a huge majority. Mm-hmm. But also, there are those who perpetuate those sort of narratives.
Okay.
You know, and the thing that I've realized is that those who have negative agendas always have the loudest voice.
Oh, yes.
They have the loudest voice. So,
and influence as well.
Yes.
A lot of people listen to them.
Yes. And they pump this thing into our heads. You know, they pump this thing into our heads. And so for me, with that platform, and it's not the only platform, you know, there are other platforms, obviously, where other people are experiencing similar things, but I'll speak only of what I know. I'm seeing a lot of white people who are scared because the media has created that conversation. Their political parties continue to perpetuate that nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
But these are people who actually just want to engage. These are people who want to contribute to South Africa. And also they don't know how. That's the other thing I'm realizing, that people do not know how to reach out to each other.
Sure.
You know, so you find someone who's just sitting in their corner And they're like, I would really love to know more about my colleagues. But they don't know where to start.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Nothing up. We've got our own chips. So it's a mess. The reality is a mess. The apartheid government did a great job of making us fear and hate each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though apartheid was 20, however many years ago, the effects
are still there.
In how we approach each other, in how we view each other. Even the spatial design.
Oh, yes.
How they throw us there.
Townships.
You know, so
I saw the... Someone took an aerial shot of the hostel in Gomorra. Alexandra.
Yeah.
And it's shaped like a coffin. When I saw that, it's literally shaped, the hostel, how it's built, it's shaped like a coffin.
No way.
Even when you look at the dynamics, though, of how a street away from the poorest of the poor is the richest square mile in Africa.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling.
It's crazy. That's why I like mixed income development.
Okay.
You know, where you have... And that's what South Africa needs more of. Where you don't have a community where everyone is rich.
Yeah.
Because those children will grow up only with rich children. And they will not have empathy.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes.
You don't want a community where everyone is poor. Because those children will grow up with only other poor children and might not have dreams.
Probably even become bitter or get into drugs.
But if you've got a community where there are rich people, there are middle class people, the children interact and they get a better understanding of life.
They get to explore other worlds.
And the word that I spoke about, AUJ, empathy.
Sure.
That is such an important concept that we need to see where the other is coming from.
Mm.
To put ourselves in their shoes.
That person's shoes.
Yeah. That's what we need. Even with issues of land, empathy. We need to look at what this means to our white brothers and sisters. Because they're here. They're not going anywhere. Do you know what I mean? And it's a reality. Whether the land was ill-gotten or not, it is theirs right now.
Mm.
And to lose something that's yours is a problem. So we need to look at that. You know, we can't just say, it has happened. Yes, it needs to be addressed, but there needs to be empathy in that process.
Mm.
You know, similarly, they need to understand why
we
want
sure.
the land.
Mm. Mm. A recent book that I've read was by Claire L. Bell.
Okay.
And she speaks about this uncomfortable journey out of, you know, the indoctrination of the apartheid regime.
Yeah.
You know, as a white female.
Okay.
Who had to go to the Eastern Cape and be immersed in what black people are experiencing, the living conditions they live under. You know, at some point she had to pee in Iskiki, which is a small bucket that we keep in the houses because obviously the toilets are either far away or the long drops or there are no toilets at all. And in her observations, she speaks about how there was a certain song or certain tune that was played within the apartheid regime that a lot of white people got used to dancing too.
Mm-hmm.
So now that the music has changed, they still only know how to dance to a particular kind of music.
Yeah.
But now what I'm more interested in at this part of the conversation is how are you going to use this platform? How are you going to use this idea to bring about that empathy, to help South Africa move into, you know, this egalitarian system that we hope and dream of, the Rainbow Nation.
Look, I mean, as it stands right now, it's happening organically on the Facebook page. So what I will do is that I will continue doing that. I'm also looking to expand onto Twitter. I'm very nervous about Twitter, but
and a lot of conversations happen on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. So
you need to capitalize on that.
So I'm looking to expand to that. But also as I've said, I've started this
Everyday Speak.
Everyday Speak, but also this Impact of a Single Word initiative. So I'm fine tuning it. But I think what I want to do is just to do talks and spread the gospel of reaching out. Of reaching out and building and finding empathy with your fellow men across whatever divides that we've built for ourselves, be it sexual orientation. You know, there are people who don't speak to people who are homosexual.
Homosexuals,
you know,
yeah.
Be it gender. There are men who shut down when they are told about patriarchy and male privilege. You know, we need to break those walls down. Is it income bracket? There are people who only hang out with people who earn a certain...
Who are affluent
and live and, you know. Is it age? You know, there are people who only, you know what I mean? So for me, it's really just about preaching the gospel and then using the findings and the interactions that happen on that platform as an example of what can be achieved.
Sure.
When we talk to each other, you know, and remove those walls.
Are you optimistic?
You know, I've always thought I was pessimistic. But with age, I think I'm becoming more optimistic. Yeah. I'm pragmatic.
Okay.
I'm very practical.
Sure.
But I think from an optimistic point of view,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Where pessimism works for me is in my craft. I must always believe that it's not going to go well, which means I must work really hard to make sure it goes well. Optimists do a terrible job. Optimists do a terrible job because I think everything is going to be fine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm a pessimist. Even when I've done a thing, I still think people are going to hate it. So I try and make it better.
Yeah.
You know. And then when people like it, I'm surprised every time. I'm like, hey, seriously.
So yeah. how do people get in contact and become part of the conversation and reach out to you?
Yeah. So I'm on Facebook, facebook.com/everydayzulu. As well as just on Facebook, Melusi Shabalala. And then also my ad agency's website, which is a mess now. And I don't know where our developer disappeared to. Eric, if you're listening to this, you're costing us, Baba. Please resurface. the web address is studio214.org.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming to the Youth Leadership Platform. And, you know, all the best with the platform. We will definitely keep an eye out. Are you going to be accepting more of the 2,000 requests of middle-aged?
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm going to continue accepting. And now I'm accepting with a purpose. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Before, it was just I'm doing this thing. And also, that's why I'm able to wake up and write every day. Like, a lot of people are amazed by that.
Sure.
How can you generate content every day? I'm like, look, man. People want this thing, and I'm going to give it to them.
Sure. Are you also on Twitter and Instagram, personally?
I don't. I have a Twitter account, but nah.
Not really.
Definitely not Instagram. I'm not a visual person. I'm a word person, yeah.
Oh.
So I'm not really into Instagram, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but also Instagram, those lives are too, they'll make you jealous. I don't want to.
the biggest cause of depression.
Yeah, no, I'm fine there on Facebook.
Sure. where you can just impact people and
yeah,
the platform.
Yeah,
I see.
But look, I mean, in terms of Melusi's Everyday Zulu, I'm exploring how I can make it work on other platforms.
Okay.
Yeah. So it might end up on Instagram, maybe where I just do little snippets.
Oh, yes. Oh,
versus the long stories that I write. But on Twitter, in fact, today, I have a Twitter, Melusi's Everyday Zulu.
Okay.
I just haven't been uploading.
Okay.
Today, that is my mission, that I'm going to upload
to
a lot of the content that currently sits on Facebook.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Share the podcast. Listen to all of our series. We've had some incredible guests, like today's guest, who is Melusi. Tell us what you want to hear more. Give us ideas. Tweet us. Tell us what you're not liking, what works, what doesn't work, and we would be more than happy to entertain you and engage you on that. At YLP Cliff Central on Twitter and Instagram, Youth Leadership Platform, on Facebook, at Simply Bongani across all social media. This is the Youth Leadership Platform. Take care.
This is CliffCentral.com.